Hi there, I'm Sam Hawley, host of ABC News Daily. Our podcast covers one big news story each weekday in just 15 minutes. From history-changing world news to cost-of-living concerns at home, expert guests and ABC journalists explain what matters most. Follow the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
From Wurundjeri Country, I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon, and today on The Breakfast Wrap.
Every fraction of a degree means more hunger, displacement and loss.
We'll head to the Amazonian city of Belém in Brazil, where world leaders have convened at the COP30 summit, including Pacific leaders like the president of Palau. He's hoping Australia can secure the next round of climate talks to be held in our region.
It's time that the Pacific host a COP.
Then we'll look back home because there's even more pressure piling on Liberal leader Susan Lee.
It is very interesting that they've sent the female out to make these comments against the first federal Liberal leader who is female. The men don't want to come out and say it, but it'll be a man who replaces Susan Lee. And I don't think that should be lost in this conversation.
You'll hear from our Friday political panel and the boss of the group trying to recruit women to the Liberal Party. What has this week of infighting done for her mission? From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. It's good to have you with us for the last day of the week. And there was plenty of politics across this morning's Radio National Breakfast with Sally Sarah that we're going to dive into. But before we get to the president of Palau, I want to give you a taste of just what's being said at the COP30 climate summit over in Brazil. The British Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, must have his eye on Australian politics because he's acknowledged that the global and domestic consensus on climate action, formed in Paris a decade ago, has been lost.
This unity was not just international, it was there within most of our countries. The only question was how fast could we go? Today, sadly, that consensus is gone.
It's been seen as a bit of a reference to America's change in direction on climate action under the Trump administration. There was a similar sentiment shared by conference host, Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. He warned about extremist forces dividing society and condemning future generations to a climate catastrophe. There were some leaders who were a little more pointed in their comments. The Colombian president, Gustavo Petro, called out the US president, saying Mr. Trump is against humankind. And Chile's president replied to Mr. Trump's September UN speech, where he called climate change a con job, Gabriel Boric calling that a lie. So as all that plays out in Brazil, there is pressure mounting on the Australian delegation to COP30 to resolve an impasse with Turquia. It's over the hosting rights for the next climate talks in 2026. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese hasn't made the trip across the Pacific to personally vouch for Australia's case. Siringa Whips Jr. is the president of Palau. He dialed in from Brazil, and he faced this question first from Sally Sara.
What's your view of Mr. Albanese's decision not to attend the COP30 summit in Brazil?
Well, I think every opportunity to engage is important. Unfortunately, I think the president of Turkey is also not attending COP, as many other leaders aren't able to get here. But it is important that we have a strong showing here at COP to continue to let the world know how important it is that we host a Pacific COP. We would definitely have welcomed and we appreciate it if the prime minister could be here to join us at this COP. But, you know, we understand that sometimes there are other priorities, so.
Just how important is it for Palau that Australia and the Pacific win the hosting rights for COP31?
We've been to Baku, we've been to the UAE, we've been to Egypt, and for the first time we're coming across and we're talking about forests. But to take us back to have another COP in the Middle East, I think is really a disservice to really making COPs inclusive and being able to bring everybody together and giving an opportunity for people to see the challenges. You know, being here in Brazil, where we're talking about forest, is appropriate. being in Australia and talking about the oceans is appropriate because we're the ones that suffer the most. The world needs to understand the challenges that we face so that we can raise ambition and really deliver on the promises that we continue to talk about.
Did you have many conversations about hosting the COP31 in Australia and the Pacific with Mr. Albanese when he visited your country recently?
He was there on vacation, not there to work. So I kept it minimal, but I did have the opportunity to share how important it was. And I know he shares the same feelings and how important it is that we work together to get this over the line.
The Albanese government has approved the extension of several major fossil fuel projects in the current term, some construction, some extension, including extending Woodside's Northwest Shelf project until 2070. What message is that sending to Pacific nations like yours?
You know, I'm pragmatic, so I know that no matter what, people still need gas. But what we should be really focusing on is, so how do we get away from these addictions? And that means increasing our ambition in transitioning away from fossil fuels. So, you know, Australia's efforts and their recent NDCs that they've declared, which puts them at almost 70%. Of course, we'd like to see higher and always, but that's an example of actually taking action to reverse the trend. So I think working with Australia and making a 100% renewable transition for the Pacific is also important. So instead of focusing on the use, let's focus on reducing demand.
If the rights to hosting COP31 are lost, what will it mean for Australia's relationship with the Pacific in your view?
Well, I think Australia is an important, very important partner with the Pacific, and Australia's leadership is key. You know, in a world that's fragmented and people are going backwards on their promises, this is a time where we really need Australia to lead and lead for the Pacific.
The National Party here in Australia has dumped commitment to net zero by 2050. The coalition partner, the Liberals, are about to decide their position. What's your message to those parties about the importance of climate change?
Australia, I think, suffers many of the impacts of climate change, from bushfires to droughts. And, you know, one of the reasons why we want to host a Pacific COP is, you know, some of these countries, they only maybe face droughts or they only face floods. We in the Pacific get all of them. We get storms, we get sea level rise, we get extreme heat, we get coral bleaching, we get droughts, we get all of it. And that's why it's important that our message gets out there, and it's important that the people of Australia understand the challenges that we have and that we work together. And that's why Australia's leadership in the energy transition is so important, and high ambition for NDCs is so important. So walking back on any of those commitments would be devastating to the Pacific, because we look to the Pacific, I mean, Australia, as the leader and as our protector.
Surungil Whipps Jr. is the president of Palau, speaking to Sally Sara on Radio National Breakfast this morning, all the way from Brazil at the COP30 Climate Summit. Well, if you can believe it, it has been 6 months since the coalition lost a landslide election to Labor. Yet the Liberal Party is very much still dealing with the fallout. It's now facing internal division over policy decisions. Does it commit to net zero by 2050? And also over its leader, Susan Lee. Now, at the time of the election, we spoke with Charlotte Mortlock. She's the executive director of Hilmer's Network. It seeks to recruit women to the Liberal Party. She shared just what she thought had gone wrong for the Libs at the election.
If we're being really frank about this, we do reviews, we do recommendations, we don't do anything. And the reason why it's so hard to get change is pretty much because there's a lot of ambitious men in the party and they say they want to support women, but the second there is a conflict between their own ambitions and actually creating reform that would create cultural and systemic changes that are needed to make our party more electable, to make us have a potential future, that's all dashed.
Charlotte Mortlock there, speaking earlier in the year on Radio National Breakfast. So has the Liberal Party learnt the lessons that it promised to after the election, or are they doomed to keep repeating history. We invited Charlotte Mortlock back on to Radio National Breakfast.
Has the party made progress in the past 6 months on learning the lessons from the election?
Look, I think we made a good start. I think when we elected Susan Lee as our leader, that was a really important signal to the public that, you know, we're picking up what you put down. We saw that you wanted a more modern version of our party. And I actually am also not afraid of kind of some of the tussling as we search for our soul after a defeat. I'm totally think that that's healthy. But I think kind of it has probably descended into a more chaotic period over the past few months. And I think that's such a huge shame because it's really crowding out an important opportunity for us to make the case to the Australian public about what we're capable of.
Chaotic in what way? What do you mean?
There's been a pressure on us to formulate policy right after this massive wipeout from the election. And that pressure was not actually driven by the Australian public. They couldn't give two hoots what we were doing because we just got smashed. It was driven by people inside our own party. And I actually think it probably came from a place where a lot of people were nervous of a drift to the centre after Peter Dutton's wipeout. And I think that some of our own members and MPs have really probably done a bit of a disservice because we were having conversations and we are having conversations that are, in my opinion, are 2 years premature. All we needed to do right now is to critique Labor because we are stuck with their policies for 2.5 years, whether we like it or not. And I think that we kind of need to get over this God government complex and start acting like we are in opposition and holding the government to account.
How can a party hold government to account if it doesn't have its own policies sorted?
Parties never have policies directly after an election loss, like if you're in opposition. You need to be able to say, hey, this is the policy that you have set in place. This is your legislation. You're failing on this metric. You're failing on this metric. You know, power prices went up by 30%. You can easily make the case without saying this is exactly what we would offer.
You were talking about some of the comments being made by members have done a disservice to the party. What sort of comments are you referring to?
I don't think it's necessarily like a comment particularly. I just think that Susan, I think, is doing an incredible job and she actually is really aligned with Liberal values and her speeches that she's done really resonate with me. I think they resonate with lots of Australians, not only women. And she could be a really unifying leader, but I think that we have struggled in the past when we have moderate leaders, example, you know, Malcolm Turnbull. But like when Peter Dutton said no to The Voice, there were lots of moderates that wanted to vote yes and did vote yes, but they didn't cause the disunity and the distraction and the muddying of his message the way that I think a lot of people are with Susan. And I think there's been this series of double standards where they can commit to net zero, as they all did under the Morrison government, but Susan can't. And while there was no pressure on Dutton to have policy formulated and rolled out for 18 months after an election loss, Susan had to do it in the first 4 months. And I think that that has been, that disservice.
Where are the votes and where is the future for the Liberal Party? Is it in the middle or is it taking the party further to the right?
I think the way for the Liberal Party to win back is to be exceptionally pragmatic and to talk to people about things that they care about. One thing that I know that is resonating very much with parents at the moment is childcare. And I don't think that the Labor policy of funneling everyone into daycare centres when daycares are on their knees and crumbling, as was shown on Four Corners, we can't make the case for the options that we would have and the alternatives that we might be able to provide if there is that continued muddied water. And so I think that childcare is a really good option for us to have a point of differentiation from Labor. I think obviously cost of living and housing, like they're the natural ones that you would go after. But there are some other things as well. So I think that there is real opportunity for us.
And you were just listening to Charlotte Mortlock, the Executive Director of the Hilmers Network, an organisation that tries to recruit women to the Liberal Party. We couldn't leave it there, though. After that interview, Liberal backbencher Sarah Henderson was on Sky News, and she said that the opposition leader, Susan Lee, was losing support within the party.
We've had a dire news poll result, a primary vote of just 24%. Things are not travelling well. I do have to say, really honestly, I do think Susan is losing support, but I do believe in miracles. We can turn things around.
So, plenty to talk about with our Friday political panel, and as you're about to hear, there were more comments made while they were chatting. Radio National Breakfast political correspondent Melissa Clark joined Charles Croucher, the chief political editor at Nine News, along with Ashley Raper, the political editor at 10 News. And Charles kicked off. He got into those comments from Sarah Henderson.
Sarah Henderson has come out and effectively, whilst I don't think it was as direct as this gathering of the party room next week, which will happen on Wednesday, high noon, for the net zero decision at noon on Wednesday, Sarah Henderson has alluded to, hinted towards, given a fairly not so subtle nudge that this should also be a discussion of leadership as well. And that starts to get into really fraught situations for Susan Lee. We've seen this game play before. Admittedly, it's been for prime ministers in recent years. It's been 16 years since this has happened with the opposition, which is an unusual little trait in Australian politics. So it's not entirely clear if there is people coalescing around another candidate. It is clear, though, there is a move, be it in Parliament, in the media, amongst people on the right of the Liberal Party, that they want to see some change after what has been a pretty awful 2 weeks for the coalition in Parliament.
These comments by Sarah Henderson, she was asked about Susan Lee's leadership this morning on Sky News. Have these comments taken things a significant step further, Ash?
Yes, absolutely. And it is interesting that Sarah Henderson has said it. Mm. Yes, that she has been outspoken. She's from the right faction. She's annoyed that she's been dumped under Susan Lee. We know that she doesn't support Susan Lee. But I don't think that she's acting alone here. There is a move from the right faction. I just think it is very interesting that they've sent the female out to make these comments against the first federal Liberal leader who is female, because, you know, there is agitation on the right, but the men don't want to come out and say it, but it'll be a man who replaces Susan Lee. And I don't think that should be lost in this conversation.
Mm. Mel, would you be expecting that others will now venture out a little more?
Look, there might be others that are in the Sarah Henderson camp of backbenchers who are willing to make their frustrations known, and there are some of those. But the leadership aspirants, the potential rivals, the group of potential replacements that we're talking about, Ash, that are the ones that would ultimately benefit from the downfall of Susan Lee, they're not going to make that move now. They don't want to be seen as being responsible for the downfall of Susan Lee. And frankly, there's no need for them to do that right now while she's dealing with the mess that is the Liberal Party's policy position. They will sit back, wait, let what is going to unfold unfold, get through to the end of the year, and then I think when we start in 2026, that's when the next shift comes.
Charles, what do you think about that kind of timeline?
Yeah, I think, well, everything's on the table at the moment, right? That's that would seem the more logical sense. I know a lot of the Labor people don't think it'll go that long. They sort of are looking at that last week of Parliament as being a really formative time, and they suspect there'll be things that move then. And that's coming from the other side of Parliament. There's still a budget to reply to. There's still the summer to get through. I don't know that there's a huge benefit in either of or any of the candidates that are potential challengers to Susan Lee jumping right now.
And why would you want to do it? Yeah. Like, have a nice summer. Like, you don't need it right now. We're 2.5 years from an election. Like.
And also that there are multiple people who could fill that role is something that drags this out as well. I think if there was a singular potential rival, the dynamic would be different. The fact that there are multiple potential rivals also makes this a more complex situation.
If it was Tony Abbott to Malcolm Turnbull
Exactly. You can bring it on, you know where the numbers are. It's a fairly straightforward contest, but there is going to have to be tussling done between those on the right who have their eyes on the prize as well.
Mel, how much of this is about net zero? How much of it is about other things?
Well, a huge amount of it is about net zero. Mm-hmm. It's been what has defined, for better or for worse, the Liberal Party for the last 15 odd years, certainly as long as I've been reporting federal politics, which is goes back to 2008, every leadership change has been influenced by the party's position on climate change and energy policy and the difficulty of reconciling different views within the coalition about that policy. So policy absolutely is central here. Personality plays a part in how that in how the machinations happen. It certainly adds a different flavour to it. But this is the same issue that has dogged the Liberal Party for more than a decade, continuing to dog the Liberal Party.
And at the moment, there's this lack of moderate voice or strength of moderate voice in that room because it's been lost through elections. Through Teal independence, also in some Labor seats. So these city seats, and this is as they come to this position as well, yes, we see it's really being dominated by the right of the party, and you know, with the Nationals coming out, let the right of the party, they've come out and supported it. But as they come to this agreement and on Wednesday, there's this huge section that when you're also trying to look back a pathway back to government for the Liberals and the coalition to win back those seats, those seats they need to win back and who they represent, they're not in the room to formulate that.
We've had a bit of an update as well. Sarah Henderson has given a bit of a doorstop in the corridor, apparently doubled down on her comments that things are not going well in the Liberal Party. Speaking at a doorstop in the press gallery, Sarah Henderson says the current state of the Liberal Party is the worst she's ever seen it. The Liberal senator says the situation at the moment is dire and that she wouldn't be telling the truth if she tried to pretend that things were okay. So certainly not walking back the comments.
Senator Henderson tends not to misspeak. As a former journalist, that's one of her traits. As Ash suggested, I don't think this is accidental. This wasn't a slip of a tongue.
She knows exactly what discussion will be generated from her words, and she has now also put other colleagues in the position where they have to respond to it. We've also had in the last half hour or so a number of Liberals that we as journalists, as a press gallery, have stopped outside a big Liberal fundraising event that's happening in Canberra today that Susan Lee and most of the front bench is at, and, you know, Angus Taylor has been asked whether he plans to roll Susan Lee, and he said absolutely not. She'll be with us through to the next election. You know, Angie Bell was asked, didn't want to talk about it. Dave Sharma's saying her leadership is safe. There's only so much you can read into these comments because it's a very dynamic movement, but what Sarah Henderson has done by very deliberately making these comments, knowing the ramifications it will have, means that there will be discussion about her leadership all of today, all of next week. It won't just be a policy debate that is being had. It will be a leadership debate as much as it will a
and
policy
Sunday
one.
Is a big news day with lots of eyeballs on television screens on Sunday night and heading into the Monday papers as well, Charles.
Yeah, that's timed deliberately. But, you know, Wednesday is still a long way away. And that was the problem with the schedule. When you put it out so early, there's a lot of forces that can move. Ash said the moderates haven't been vocal. I reckon they're going to get vocal in the next 5 days because this is what is essentially a private discussion in a party room that's been playing out publicly because the Liberals and, to a greater extent, the Nationals couldn't let the process play out. They didn't have the discipline as a party to let the process play out. They decided to have this debate publicly, and that's what we're seeing now.
And that is our Friday political panel with Charles Croucher, Ashley Raper and Melissa Clark. Thank you so much for listening to The Breakfast Wrap today and right across the week. Sally Sara is our wonderful host, and every interview that she does is produced by our ABC Radio National Breakfast team. Every day we have another fantastic producer helping craft this show, and today that was Michael Commode. Our executive producer for The Breakfast Wrap and Radio National Breakfast is Eleni Soltis. I'm Lixidim Dundon, and we'll see you next week. And you might want to mark Tuesdays in your calendar. We've got a very special show in store that we're putting on from Old Parliament House. Here's why.
Well, may we say, God save the Queen. Because nothing will save the Governor-General.
Radio National Breakfast's coverage of the 50th anniversary of the dismissal coming up on Tuesday the 11th of November. And that means a very special edition of The Breakfast Wrap as well. So until next week, have a lovely weekend. We'll catch you on Monday.